I don't know. Can you hear it, ladies and gentlemen, in the background? We've had, as you know, here in Southern California this week, all manner. I mean, it's basically been it's been like living in dog patch. I know you think it's glamorous and everything. It's dog patch. It's rural Arkansas looks down on us now because, well, phones went out, water went out. You know about the electricity. Now they're threatening not to sell us any gas, natural gas, that is to say. So since we already had a stage 3 electric power emergency this week, and this broadcast serves, you know, listeners not only in all 50 states but around the world, it's important to us to keep the power going. So we're not depending on the electric power grid right now, ladies and gentlemen. It's very quiet. It's really amazing. He's over there. This entire hour, ladies and gentlemen, is being powered by Ed Begley Jr., who is over in the corner just pedaling like crazy. And Ed, if you need anything, just let us know.
All right.
Okay. So I feel confident that we will not go dark this good hour, ladies and gentlemen. That's, you know, it's the least I can do. And incidentally, it's also the most I can do. So we're about to experience this wacky inauguration presided over by Ricky Martin and conducted in daytime, apparently, the inaugural ceremony, the concert and everything on the Mall. I don't know if this is true or if it's just a report, but what one hears is that, and this is unprecedented. Normally, the inaugural ceremony is held at night, but George W. Bush wanted it held during the day so that he could free the nighttime up for his appearance at some fundraisers. So, for those of you wondering about the Clinton legacy, it's intact, and it's in place. Among the things to be worried about now, of course, is flying. Not to be fearful of flying itself, but to be fearful of long flights in economy, in coach. Long flights in coach, ladies and gentlemen, we're supposed to be afraid of now. Some of us, of course, already always have been because of the, you know, the fat people and the kids. But now we learn today 1 in 10 passengers over 50 may be at risk of developing blood clots on a long flight. The research involving more than 400 people suggests that the risk of deep vein thrombosis, or DVT, from air travel may be greater than previously thought, particularly among older passengers. 13% of DVT cases occurred in patients who traveled on long journeys, mostly in aircraft. Airlines are feeling under increased pressure to take action, but they've been pressurized for years. The study in DVT, due to be published in the British medical journal The Lancet, tested 400 volunteers over the age of 50 before and after a plane journey of more than 8 hours. 10% had blood clots after the journey, although they were all minor and most would not have caused any long-term problems. But it is compelling evidence that long periods of inactivity on passenger jets can cause blood clots. So, before long, it's going to look like Body by Jake up there. The airlines, to avoid loss, you know what's going to happen, to avoid lawsuits by the survivors of somebody who has a case of DVT from a long-haul flight. Everybody in coach is going to be conned and persuaded into doing jumping jacks every hour by the cabin personnel. Ooh. Then it's really going to smell good in there. That's the future. This is the present. Hello, welcome to the show.
I'm standing in for Joe. So restless, would I keep her? said we've been friends so long that I would be the one he would trust with his life.
I could have been a sailor, I could have been a cook, a real life lover, could have been a book, I could have been a signpost, could have been a clock, as simple as a kettle, steady as a rock. I could be here and now. I would be, I should be, but how? I could have been. But what are these things first? I could have been. Could have been your pillar, could have been your dog. I could have stayed beside you, could have stayed for more. I could have been your statue, could have been your friend. A whole long lifetime could have been the end. Could be oh so true. I would be, I should be through and through. I could have been, but what are these things first? I could have been.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you, you, personally and impersonally, to another edition of Le Show. And there is much, you know, it's a turning point. Page is being turned. Bill Clinton is being invited, at least, to step off the stage. George W. Bush to take his... Let me be metaphorical here. Rightful place. And it's all going to happen this week. And we're all supposed to feel a sense of awe, I guess. Is that it? Is that the appropriate... Bewilderment would be better, I think. Better choice, given the circumstances. But awe? Awe would be okay. Or just awe. Or just awe. One of those. One of those would be good. Let's talk digital. Can we? No, first of all, let's catch up on some ratings news, some important ratings news, ladies and gentlemen. This week, it was reported that for the first time since the Lakers were in Minneapolis, I think, the CBS Evening News beat the ABC World News Tonight in the ratings. Dan beat Pete for that coveted number two spot. Now, that there's a lot of explanations of why that would be, mainly revolving around some college football bowl games that ABC carried that caused preemptions of the news in the Western United States and all of that. And that's probably as good a reason as any, having watched both shows, you know. Hard to see why you'd, if you were a partisan of one, why you'd go to the other. But something remains constant, and you know what it is. Tom Brokaw, still number one. And you know my theory. Let's check it out. Let's check it out in the new year. See if it still holds. Here, a randomly selected broadcast of the NBC Nightly News this week. Let's see how many times Tom Brokaw says the magic word tonight.
The president-elect's choice for attorney general. NBC's David Gregory is at the White House tonight. Thanks very much, NBC's David Gregory tonight. One of President-elect Bush's choices appears to be a shoe-in for his confirmation. And as NBC's Lisa Myers reports tonight, not even the controversial issue of school vouchers got in his way today. Now to that major merger in the American airline industry that's been brewing since the weekend. Tonight, it is official. Up next, NBC News in depth tonight. The hard truth about dieting. Our Lifeline report in depth tonight. NBC News in depth tonight. It's the number one New Year's resolution and one of the toughest to keep. Tonight, in collaboration with the Washington Post, here's NBC's chief science correspondent, Robert Bazell. And also tonight, the home of the brave. Even the Coast Guard thought they were nuts. But these tough old Navy salts made it home tonight. An American in harm's way tonight, apparently kidnapped in Chechnya. And there's a debut tonight in the nation's capital. Tonight, it is a permanent part of the FDR Memorial. And another debut tonight in the nation's capital. Tonight, the home of the brave. Even though almost everyone thought this one was too daring, too dangerous. But tonight, mission completed. I'm Tom Brokaw. I'll see you back here tomorrow night.
17 tonights and one NBC. So there you go. That's what it takes to be number one. 17 iterations of the word tonight and one our chief. I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying that's what it takes to be number one in modern America. All right, now let's go to digital, shall we? The wonder world of the digital wonderland. The FCC is now the Federal Communications Commission, which is about to be chaired, if the rumors are correct, by the son of Colin Powell. Colin Powell is going to be running everything. His son is going to be chairman of the FCC. Yes, sir, Mr. Powell. The general, sir, please think. Ed, just keep peddling. So the FCC is recommending that digital receivers be made mandatory equipment in both high definition and analog TV sets. Analog are like the ones you buy now, the good ones. The commission is frustrated with the sluggish rollout of digital TV. Darn. And it sees the requirement as a way to boost widespread adoption of digital TV, that is, not of children. Currently, some 750,000, they're saying HD TV sets. I don't know if that's digital or real high definition, and I don't even know if that number is accurate. Doesn't comport with the numbers I've seen elsewhere, but let's take that as granted. One figure in the industry says, if you're not counting in the millions, don't even count. You're wasting your breath. So they're counting less than, well, about 750,000. Few of those sets include the tuners needed to receive digital signals. Well, what would make them HD TV sets then, you see? Few of the 172 TV stations beaming out digital signals are offering high-definition pictures because too few receivers exist to receive it. Broadcasters say, this from the AP, broadcasters say digital TV sets are too expensive and argue their digital programming must be offered immediately on cable systems to reach a wide audience. TV makers say broadcasters have not produced enough compelling content. Cable companies say carrying digital broadcast channels right now, while they must still offer the same program in analog form, would force a channel crunch that might make them drop popular cable programs, like one of the 8 home shopping services they offer. More about that coming up. Anyway, the FCC was expected to make that requirement this week. They took it off the agenda, but they're still expected to act on the matter as early as this coming week. Broadcasters will return their... Oh, you know all this. Anyway. Let's go to the ground. Let's go to where the pedal meets the metal, where the rubber hits the road. Australia has introduced digital television. Says Charlie Crazy, not Crazy Charlie, Charlie Crazy, manager of a stereo and TV store. Quote, even with all my experience in the business, it took me 40 minutes of sheer hard work to tune the box into the digital system. It would be a nightmare for the average viewer trying to set up the box. Even retailers will have problems. I can see why one technician wrote to us, quoting, $200 to set a box up. The digital, I'm continuing to quote, hence the fake accent, the digital picture quality at 2 stores was poor compared with the analog picture. The third store said picture quality remained about the same. Also, still quoting Charlie Crazy, also bound to irritate viewers is the 2 to 3 second delay of the digital picture and sound, which lags behind the analog transmission. That's the way they do it in Australia. That's the digital wonderland that the FCC wants to nudge us along into. Don't you think? Okay. Some more things to be worried about, ladies and gentlemen. Again, we go back and forth on this cell phone deal. I'd call it a roller coaster, but the Roller Coaster Manufacturers Association has objected. So let's just say it's a ping pong kind of deal, because I don't think they have a strong lobby. Cell phones have been linked to human cancer in a scientific study for the first time. The research suggests there is a 3-fold increase among people who regularly use cell phones in eye cancers. Ever heard of eye cancer? I have never. I mean, you know, I read the obits. Eye cancer? A 3-fold increase in eye cancer would mean, what, 3 people got it ever? I don't know. I don't mean to minimize it, but eye cancer. The results will cause concern within the mobile telephone industry. The radiation emitted from cell phones has long been known temporarily to alter the workings of brain cells, but there was previously no evidence of permanent damage to health. If confirmed by subsequent research, the finding could lead to thousands of costly lawsuits by people with eye and possibly brain cancers. How many people from this was research carried out by the University of Essen in Germany, where they eat a lot, I guess. Essen. It investigated a form of eye cancer called uveal melanoma, in which tumors... Oh, you don't want to know. You don't want to know. Dr. Andreas Stang led the research. He examined 118 people with uveal melanoma, obtained details about their use of digital mobile phones. This was compared with a control group of 475 people without the disease. He found 118 people with this eye cancer. Okay, I stand corrected. No, I'm sitting corrected, but you know what I mean. To prevent bias, the results were analyzed. They found the cancer victims had a much higher rate of cell phone use, though Stang cautions that his study needs confirmation. The mechanism by which the radiation might cause cancer is uncertain, but it's known that the watery contents of the eye assist the absorption of radiation. In the meantime, I guess good safety practice would be don't hold the cell phone near your eye. Of course, that's not what you use. That's not what you, you know what I'm saying. But, okay, that's a down one. We got to mark that on the downside. And following up this other kind of creepy story that's been going on, the use of depleted uranium, DU, DU in artillery shells in the Balkans, in NATO actions in Kosovo and Bosnia. NPR this week had a very reassuring report about depleted uranium. A guy had a bottle, not a bottle, he had a canister of it on his in his bookcase in his study, but he didn't drink any of it. Didn't drink some liquefied depleted uranium dust, which to me is the clincher. But now today, from a British newspaper, British Army doctors warned 4 years ago that exposure to depleted uranium increases the risk of developing lung, lymph, and brain cancer. So what about this guy with it sitting on his shelf? The warnings in an internal Ministry of Defense document are in marked contrast to persistent public assurances playing down the risk from DU. Inhalation of insoluble uranium dioxide dust will lead to accumulation in the lungs with very slow clearance, if any, says the unpublished document by the Ministry of Defense. Although chemical toxicity is low, there may be localized radiation damage of the lung leading to cancer. All personnel should be aware, I'm still quoting from this British Defense Department document, all personnel should be aware that uranium dust inhalation carries a long-term risk. Working inside a DU dust-contaminated vehicle without adequate respiratory protection will expose the worker to up to 8 times the standard accepted exposure level. Okay. So maybe you understand now why the guy didn't drink a glass of it. Also, I think it has a fairly dusty taste. And the Royal Navy, the British Royal Navy, is phasing out depleted uranium ammunition. It follows a decision by American manufacturers to stop producing the shells. That would help you phase it out if it's not being manufactured. Veterans of the Gulf and Balkans wars in Britain are now being offered voluntary medical checks. The American manufacturers have stopped the production line. The U.S. Navy has been phasing out the materiel for about a decade. Depleted uranium is being replaced with tungsten-tipped ammunition, which is not radioactive and far less toxic. Oh, well, that's a good second choice. The safe stuff. And where are we going, ladies and gentlemen? Why would we care about any of those hazards when we like the knife? The most recent figures from the American Society of Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery say cosmetic surgery on teenage boys and girls almost doubled from 1996 to 1998. Since 1998, plastic surgeons say they've increased a big increase in teenage boys seeking surgery. Well, maybe we do need a draft, if that's the alternative. Get it. We are performing surgery on more and more teenage boys, said Dr. Derek Antel, a cosmetic surgeon and official spokesperson for the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. They're becoming very concerned about the way they look. Like teenage boys weren't concerned about the way they looked before? What were they in there standing at the mirror popping if they weren't concerned? More than 1,800 teenage boys had breast reduction surgery in America in 1998, making the third most popular teenage cosmetic operation. Dr. Antel believes removing what the boys consider to be physical defects increases their confidence. When I first meet these boys, they look at the floor and find it difficult to make eye contact. After they've had surgery, they hold their chin up high. Because we put that thing in under their chin. And look you in the eye. Says Dr. James Reardon, another plastic surgeon, there's no evidence to suggest that more men need surgery today. Rather, they're becoming more aware of the problem. They're more conscious of how their bodies appear. They want to look better. I've seen 12-year-old boys who refuse to go to summer camp because they're self-conscious about their bodies. They're often too embarrassed even to go to school. In the past, these kinds of problems weren't discussed so much, and men didn't know that this treatment was available. You know, in the past, they were told, you're getting your butt to school, or forget about how your face looks. You're not going to like the way your butt looks. Am I wrong? I hate to sound like I'm wrong. But, you know, guys got to look good.
Yesterday, I saw him there, a peacock standing at my shoulder. Well, I never knew that I could care to see someone so beautiful. Well, I'd met his type once or twice, and I recognized this prince of high. So when he bent to speak, I knew he'd seek out his reflection in my own eyes. He's all symphony, and of course he sees mirrors everywhere he goes. And every day the popping jay dresses right so tight, it's shocking. And when he walks and when he talks, he knows you're watching. He's all come home to pick my heart off the floor. No looking around the room, wondering who he's gonna do. Is she beautiful too? Is she pinned me to the wall? No more wondering why every man, woman, beast, child finds him charming. Just like I do, I'm happy to bask in the love on his face that he feels for himself, for himself. He's ordinary.
This is Le Show, and let's talk reality, ladies and gentlemen. Volunteers are clamoring to take part in a new British program in which they will have to endure the hardships suffered by pioneers settling an untamed America. Frontier House will require the modern settlers to spend 5 months in wooden cabins in Montana. What are they, movie stars? Recreating conditions in 1882. Involving life without electricity or running water, and meeting with cowboys and local tribes. Well, there are cowboys and local tribes, aren't there, still? More than 2,000 people have so far applied from across the United States and Britain to live in the cabins from May to October. Oh, try October to May if you want some hardships in Montana. May to October? Three households will be featured, two families and a group of young men. Food will be dependent on what they can grow or buy with a limited budget at a 19th century convenience store in the nearest town, a three-hour buggy ride away. The women will be required to wear bustles when they go to church on Sundays, and the men expected to don cowboy hats when they hunt for game or fish in the creeks. Butter will be churned by hand, the arable land in the valley where they live prepared by a horse-drawn plow, and the food cooked on a wood-burning stove. May through October, hardships, ladies and gentlemen. You get it. And speaking of reality programming, Fox, as you know, has this new reality show called Temptation Island. They suffered a kind of an embarrassment in addition to all the attacks they're undergoing from morality guardians who say this program encourages the testing of vows of committed couples. One of the four unwed couples participating were sent home partway through the taping of the six episodes. Fox discovered that, contrary to the rules, that couple, what were their names? Don't have their names here. That couple has a child, and that's against the rules. This is a black eye for risk management consultants PricewaterhouseCoopers. The network hired them following its embarrassment over Who Wants to Marry a Multimillionaire. Because of, remember his name? Thank you, Rick Rockwell. By the way, it's interesting to note the name of the company producing Temptation Island, Rocket Science Laboratories. Yes, sir. Fox executives made no mention of the having to kick that couple off the island during their press appearances last weekend. And a lot of people are wondering what would drive a network to put on a program like that.
Somewhere, there are palm trees and tropical sunsets, luxurious offices, and the hottest gate guards in Hollywood. Welcome to the island of the 20th century Fox lot, cut off from all contact with the North American continent. Ever wonder what happened if young and attractive executives committed to quality television found themselves surrounded by temptation? Stop wondering and start watching, because this March, you'll see it all on Desperation Island.
You guys are in for an unforgettable 6 weeks. 13 if we get back up. Gail, Sandy.
Yeah.
Let's meet your tempters. How about Corey?
Hey, I'm a 22-year-old advertising time buyer who's looking for a lock on the male 18 to 24s.
Does he have a bigger swimsuit? I mean...
Hey, what about Naya?
I am Naya. I'm 26 and very Nubian. I'm pitching 8 new extreme reality concepts from Belgium.
Sandy, you're sweating.
No, I'm fine. We don't get the sea breeze until after 3.
Which is stronger, their commitment to programming excellence or the scientifically devised temptations?
Sandy and Gail loses the 50-yard run to the beach shack race.
Okay.
Now the winner gets one free yielding to temptation.
Easy.
Piece of cake.
Hi, I'm Rupert. Want to come by my cabana?
Uh-oh.
Wow. At least put on a shirt.
The next step in reality television is television reality. Join host Vander L. Wright, where temptation is its own reward. Desperation Island, coming soon. It's way, Fox.
Early to bed and early to rise makes a man a woman.
miss out on the nightlife. Early to bed and early to rise makes a man or woman miss out on the nightlife.
Speaking of nightlife, Paula Jones is, of course, being featured in Penthouse. Paula Jones from Bill Clinton's Paula Jones? Oh, I'm sure she doesn't want to be thought of that way. Digging up the women of the Clinton era, so to speak, the Weekly Standard magazine owned by Rupert Murdoch, failed to reach Paula Jones for comment on the end of the Clinton era, but they did get some comments from her estranged husband, Steve, described in the Weekly Standard as a failed actor and airline ticketing agent. Steve had the first inkling their marriage was going south after Paula jeopardized their credibility by lending her name to the Celebrity Psychic Network. Her Penthouse spread has him apoplectic, though he doesn't think it will win him custody of their children. Steve says he enjoyed playing the chess game that threatened Clinton, but he says that while his wife was inappropriately propositioned, she certainly shouldn't have stayed in Clinton's hotel room as long as she did. Oh, now Steve Jones says that. She certainly shouldn't have stayed in the hotel room as long as she did. With a mound of debts and a busted marriage, Steve says, I sometimes sit down with a good Cabernet and think, what the hell was it all about, and would I do it again? Absolutely not. Unquote. That's the Cabernet talking. But Bill Clinton is on his way out, at least out of the White House, if not out of our dreams. He's been having this farewell tour. He's gone around the country to places that figured prominently in the beginning of his political career, or at least his presidential run, including Dover, Delaware this week, where he repeated his pledge to stick with those folks till the last dog dies. And he's also giving a welter, I believe would be the correct word. Well, he's a welterweight. It's appropriate. A welter of interviews, a welter of exclusive interviews, if you can deal with the contradiction, to any medium willing to sort of put his spin on himself, to spin himself a little bit for our viewing pleasure before next Saturday arrives and he has to turn the keys over. It's a poignant time, and perhaps time for what might be the last episode of Clinton Something, next here on the show.
Clinton Something.
This is my health task force stuff, Betty.
I knew it.
Well, this goes over to my Senate office.
Is that okay with you, Mr. President?
Oh, sure, Betty. I can't take all this crap to my library.
No, sir.
Well, Mr. President, you've had yourself a pretty damn good farewell tour.
Yeah. No shuck, man. I've had a better farewell tour than the Beatles ever had.
They never had one.
That's what I mean. Come on, I don't have a lot of time left to sit at this desk.
Goes by quick, doesn't it? Quicker than a gator's apology. Quicker than a Nutia's heartbeat.
Yeah, James, it goes by quickly.
Yeah.
Man, it's been amazing.
If you had it to do all over again...
What are you kidding?
Well, it's made you a white-haired old fart before your time.
Yeah, sure, but come on, I got to do a lot of good for the American people.
Yeah,
And if you believe this week's rumors, I might do a cameo in a James Bond film.
Yeah, I saw that. Is that...
Hey, once I don't have to worry about upholding the dignity of the office, you never know. Anyway, pretty good for a kid from Hot Springs.
Hope.
Yeah, right.
Yes, I'll go to the first 2 hours of the hearing, then I'll do the press avail. Well, the statement has no credibility if I deliver it before going to the hearing. Okay, then the lunch. Okay, right. Thanks.
I am going to miss being that kind of busy.
Oh, sure. Hard to get the old adrenals pumping out on the 14th hole.
Well, see, James, being the youngest has always been my blessing and my curse.
Uh-huh.
I mean... If I had taken office at the age I am now, my appetites would already have been curbed. On the other hand, I did have the energy to pull all-nighters with Yasser Arafat.
Hey, listen, you could do a lot worse than going down in history as the first American president to have a midlife crisis while in office.
Well, you know, at least I didn't paint Air Force One red and take the top off it.
Bill, can you make a Senate spouse's tea a week from Thursday?
Only if Adassa Lieberman is there. Man, she is hot. Just kidding, huh?
Mm-hmm. Great.
You guys okay?
Oh, we're fine. So, Elvis is leaving the building.
Hey, Mr. President.
Al, it's been a little while.
Yeah, well, you know, I needed some time for healing.
Hey, we all needed a little healing.
Uh-huh. Are you healed?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, listen.
Yeah.
You did what you thought you had to do, you know? You were wrong, but you did what you had to do.
Hey, look, I won the popular vote.
Hey, pal, all I know is Ricky friggin' Martin is playing the inaugural, you know? What kind of middle-of-the-road soulless crap is that?
Tell the vice president I said hi.
James sent his regards.
Oh, hey, tell him I am so sorry.
Okay. Sorry about what?
Well, if I'd have won, his wife wouldn't have been appointed a counselor to the vice president.
Yeah.
He'd still have that odd couple act with her.
Al says he's sorry he broke up your act.
Yeah, that's okay, sir. I didn't need to be on Meet the Press. I can always go run another Israeli election.
So, Al, look, we're going to have a little farewell party Friday night, but I know you're probably busy moving out of your residence, so...
Well, actually, sir, we're all packed, as a matter of fact. I'm sitting on a cardboard box full of my winter clothes right now because the furniture is gone.
Oh. Well, it's kind of too late to change the guest list, but I'm sure we'll see you shortly after GW puts his hand on the Bible.
Yeah, I'll be the guy at the Ritz-Carlton throwing up into the bidet.
Bill?
Yeah?
You want to keep this box of cigars?
Well, I don't smoke them anymore.
So to speak.
So, yeah. But, I guess we should keep them.
Yeah, that's what I figured. If you're indicted, they're evidence. Okay, just checking.
Sometimes she acts as if her billing records don't stink. Anyway, look, Al, it's been a great 8 years.
Well, Mr. President, as the Fleetwood Mac song had it way back then, let's don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as the Mac sang at my farewell concert... You can go your own way.
Uh-huh. Well, tell James, I'm sorry.
You're sorry again.
Hey, no problem. Who knows, I could get back in the game just by having a little thing with Laura Ingram, you know. That's one foxy right winger.
He says thanks.
Okay, well, good luck with the houses.
Well, thank you. Good luck with the life.
You know, I...
You know something, James?
What's that, sir?
I can probably take being a third wheel on Hillary's motorcycle for a little while, as long as...
Yeah?
As long as I don't have to take his calls anymore. Come on, voters are paying for the dish. Let's watch Razorback Hoops one more time.
Youthful angst and middle-aged power. Together they add up to Clinton Something. Weeknights starting January 22nd.
P.S. Ricky Martin's childhood friend and collaborator on La Vida Loca says he's shocked that Ricky Martin's performing at the Bush inaugural. Even the childhood friends don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this pre-inaugural edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, blanketing the East Coast of North America. And on your computer, around the world whenever you want it, at www.kcrw.com. Come on, be a .commie. And it'd be just like another couple getting thrown off Temptation Island if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. Address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. And we'll return to conventional power now. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.